The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, Sarah. Hi.
This is a big episode.
Yes, it is.
Rendez-vous. The whole thing is in French, oddly.
Yes, yeah. I know. It's so challenging for us to learn all that French.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Allô, Sarah.
Allô, Paul. Salut, Paul. Comment ça va?
Ça va. With a gun.
We have so much to talk about.
It's very exciting for me. Well, we can talk about it when we get there. There's a lot of exciting first-time things for me as an actor.
Oh, okay. I want to write that down, too. First-time things. It was also a gross episode.
Oh.
There, I spent more time
than maybe
usual,
the grossest.
Just being like, didn't want to see that, didn't want to see that.
All surrounding Gary Bellick
and
Bagwell.
I
mean, there's forced defecation, there's torture, there's limb pulling with stitches.
There's getting beaten about the head with a meat tenderizer.
Yep, there's that.
Which is also...
And some hot pokers.
Hot pokers.
It's really, really something.
Yeah, a lot going on. Let's do the index. It's all just us this week because I figured this episode and probably the next one.
We got a lot to
talk about. So, and there's some really great fan questions this week, actually.
I posted something
a couple days ago. So we'll make sure we leave room for some of those. So,
okay.
Calistine Index. This is episode 210, Rendezvous. It aired on the 6th of November, 2006. It was written by one of our regular writers, Karen Usher, who outgrossed all the boys. Directed by Dwight Little. It was actually Dwight's second episode. He did 110... back in season one. He would go on to do another episode in season two and then two more in season four. So he was very much sort of in our mix and in the Fox Studios stable too. He came from Bones. I think he did, 23 episodes of Bones, which is, that's
a lot.
That's a lot of Bones. This episode drew 8.63 million live viewers in the 8 p.m. time slot against Deal or No Deal on NBC, a rerun of How I Met Your Mother on CBS. And over on ABC, they were hosting the 40th annual CMAs, the Country Music Association Awards.
Did you win that year? I can't remember.
No.
Who beat you?
Beyonce.
That Trisha... Nice.
Beyonce.
All right. To recap episode 210. Ready?
Yes.
Michael and Sarah find each other in New Mexico, but Mahone finds them both. They lure him into a trap, then Sarah tends Michael's wounds and expresses her concerns about him letting Teabag into society. Teabag is being tortured by Bellick and Gary, who seems to swallow a key, retrieve it using laxative, and find the locker it opens, only to have Gary double-cross Bellick, take the money for himself. Meanwhile, Link and LJ get into another car wreck, but this time it's Link's long-lost father come to the rescue. But they're all betrayed by a mole who reports the whole thing back to Agent Kim. During all of this, Sucre is trying to unsuccessfully contract Merrick Cruz, and Kellerman finds Sarah.
By the way, when we get to trying to translate this into other languages,
that's not going to go
AI great. AI is going to hate you.
Come find me and kill me.
Come find you and kill you. In world events this week, Saddam Hussein, leader of Iraq, was found guilty of crimes against humanity and sentenced to death by hanging. Also this week, the first Muslim was elected to the U.S. Congress, Minnesota Representative Keith Ellison.
In pop culture, on Halloween, the founders of Reddit sold the online social network to Condé Nast for $10 million just 16 months after creating the website. That's a pretty good return.
Yeah.
Reddit's current market valuation is in the multi-billion dollars.
Also a good rate of return.
Yeah, yeah. Also this, does Condé Nast still own? Also this week, Snoop Dogg charged with a felony possession of a deadly weapon at John Wayne Airport in California. I believe that's Orange County Airport. The weapon in question was not his Killer Flow, but a collapsible baton.
Paul's laughing because I wrote that and he just realized that the joke was that bad as he was saying it.
Yes. And in art news, Jackson Pollock's canvas number 5 from 1948 became the world's most expensive work of art after David Geffen, co-founder of Geffen Records and DreamWorks SKG, sold the Pollock for $140 million.
So the upshot is that at the time, they thought that Jackson Pollock's painting was worth more than Reddit. Probably true. I think I agree.
Fascinating.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Okay, let's take a quick break.
We'll be right back.
And we'll be right back. Talk about the episode.
Hey, besties. It's Lindsay from Bitch is a Bad Word, a fearlessly raw podcast shining light on the dark epidemic of domestic abuse. We bring in all the experts, we have the expertise, and we're building you a bestie toolkit to help you navigate your road through and out of domestic abuse. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen to your shows. Reach out on Instagram at Bitch is a Bad Word Pod. Find us on TikTok and YouTube at Bitch is a Bad Word. Give us a call or send us a text at 331-BITCHES. Send us your texty to your exty or your texty to your bestie, and we might even read it on the show. We got your back, and we'll see you at Bitch is a Bad Word Podcast.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food. And before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Welcome back.
Paul. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Welcome back, listeners and viewers.
So many notes. Sarah, first of all, I want to start here.
Okay.
After talking about how good you are doing nothing, like looking at paper cranes and alleys and going through numbers,
phone book acting.
You guys together, you're both excellent actors, but also,
thanks.
And this is the kind of thing that you just, you know, this is why television could be wonderful. It's because when a relationship pops, the audience wants more of it, and the writers, creators can tease it out as long as they want and then put them back together. Mm-hmm. I mean, the will they, won't they, of Sarah and Michael has been simmering. I mean, this is episode, they have not seen each other since episode 22.
Didn't even see each other in 22, okay. I don't think.
They've not been in the same room.
Yeah, since season one.
Right, since season one. And for the audience, that's like a year.
Yep.
So this is just an incredible tease. I will also say the scene, both all the scenes, but particularly the scene where you find him and he gets out of the car, which is beautifully shot. I love that it's both from a little bit of a distance on a long lens, and then even the close-ups are long lens, making you guys feel kind of, even though you're outside, like in a bit of a bubble.
It also meant on the day they weren't right up in our faces, so you felt right? like you were alone.
And I would imagine it was cross-shot, meaning you were doing both your sides at the same time. You probably can't. I don't know. Did we do that?
I don't
know. We had multiple cameras.
We had multiple cameras. I don't honestly know. I mean, it.
I don't know.
There wasn't a lot of lighting
outside, right?
To be done.
If you're outside, yeah, maybe. Anyway, and this is something we'll talk about as the season goes on, because it applies to other things, certainly in some of my stuff. I think it could be intimidating to do those scenes because as an actor, you feel the pressure of, oh my God, it's all been leading to this.
Yeah.
And it sometimes becomes hard to stay in the moment. You get caught up in how it's supposed to look or sound or feel. Mm-hmm. And if you're not emotional in the right way, sometimes it's hard to let go. You guys both seem so present and connected to one another that it really just, it just plays wonderfully.
Well,
do you remember?
First of all, thank you. I remember that scene knowing that there was a lot on it.
Yeah.
I think Wentworth did some rewriting on the day because I remember we were working on it together. And I asked for, I was like, I need a few minutes to learn these words because, you know, they were different words on the day than I had learned when I had come to work. And we just took ourselves away out into the, it wasn't really desert, but whatever that landscape was. And we just ran it and ran it and ran it and ran it. And I didn't know anything about television directing at the time. I give Dwight Little a huge amount of grace, amount of thanks for giving us for having the grace to give us that time and not just sort of be like, hey guys, we got to move on. We got to shoot a bunch of stuff. I don't remember anyone ever rushing us, first ADs or anyone. But I think because of that, by the time we were doing it on camera, it felt like we'd been able to get back to the scene and away from all of the, like, the writers calling and being like, hey, this is going to be exciting. You know, we want to see this. We want to, whatever.
Yeah.
And also, you know, something that I noticed about myself as an actor years later was that I plug into the other person's energy in a scene. But I very rarely set the energy in a scene. And I think that's maybe partly just, I honestly don't know what it comes from. But I remembered, I noticed it on Walking Dead because Andy and John have radically different energy as actors and as people. And I would take on a different energy in the scene. And I was like, oh, I don't set this energy. And so Wentworth's take on this moment was... this is not a sort of like, oh my God, run out of the cars, embrace. I'm sure there was a conversation about, do they kiss? And I am relatively sure that before I even had an answer out, he was like, no. And so...
I can't imagine, frankly, that the writers wanted that either, but go on.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I think there was a push for something physical, some kind of embrace or something that I think we both like really kind of resisted. All by way of saying that I think Wendt really sent the tone.
When he would rewrite a scene like that, would he rewrite your stuff too?
No.
No, he'd say, I would like to say this.
Yeah.
What would you say?
He'd be like, this is what makes sense to me. Well, most of it was, this is what I'm not going to say. This feels I can say this to you with my face.
Sure.
You know.
I would also say, and I know you were talking about the process, you know, it's kind of, I mean, there are times where it's appropriate. Most of the time it's inappropriate on the day in television to be like, we need to work on this scene right now. You're like, well, we're here on the day and this is a rough time to do it. But depending on how the schedule is, and also as number one and two on the call sheet, It's like kind of your prerogative.
Number one and like seven, but yeah.
Okay.
But
If you don't do it all the time, mm-hmm. It's obviously important. Again, kudos to whoever the first AD and Dwight Little for taking the time to do it. Mm-hmm. I'll also say, and we mentioned this during the watch, that scene is not rushed.
No, not even in the cutting of it.
No.
Yeah.
And that is, I'm so impressed. I mean, for a show that really is like moving story at a very fast pace
yeah.
and just kind of hitting, the fact that they then slow it down to take the time mm-hmm. to milk what everyone's been waiting for so long, it's frankly, it's very satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had a good laugh on it because we're ironic assholes, Gen X assholes. But, you know,
yeah.
her like Panama, like this is the, you're not obviously playing it for humor, but the kind of, I never know if it's incredulity or incredulousness of.
Either, yeah.
I need to know what the plan is and.
Yeah.
The plan is, you had a great line reading where you kind of stumbled over the two most wanted men in America. Like, that's the fucking plan, dude?
Because clearly the detail of his plan to get out of Fox River was a mastermind level. And it's like, but you're...
Well, also...
Your plan to get out of America is... We're just going to go.
Sketchy. Also, you know, Sarah is, look at her, you know, from Sarah's perspective, she put her faith in this guy. She got burned.
Mm-hmm.
It got her in a fucking boatload of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Her father's dead. Now someone's trying to kill her. Mm-hmm. And she thinks she may be in love with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she really questions her own barometer on things. Obviously, she's a recovering addict. She trusted this guy who got burned, like over mm-hmm. and over and over again,
mm-hmm.
except he has offered her this lifeline, which is, there's an answer to all of this.
Right.
And like what, like when you're in deep trouble or you're in a bad place in your life, and if somebody says, you know, this one key
mm-hmm.
fixes the whole goddamn thing and
yeah.
you can be with this man that you might be in love with, you're like, great. And then you waltz into that and the answer is,
we're going to run to Panama.
We're going to go to Panama.
Panama. Yes, Panama. And I think, I mean, there's a couple things. The obvious ones are, trusted him. He obviously didn't know that I was an addict and I landed in a relapse. My dad died.
I don't think it would have mattered to him, but okay.
But then, well, I don't know. With his conscience, like, we talked about this a little bit at the end of last season, but I do think it genuinely comes as a surprise to him that his actions result in her relapsing, one way or another.
Sure. And also, he seemed emotional about the fact that your father had died.
100%. But also, he was right about Lincoln being innocent. You know what I mean? I think, like, he has proven
yes.
himself in some ways, which is, you said my brother didn't do it, and that actually, the evidence is there. And so I think the question is not, is he trustworthy? I think maybe we've sort of established he is. The question is, are you safe? Can I?
Well, also, right, but also, yes, trustworthy, and also, you know, God, a plan to fix this sounds wonderful.
Right, right.
But it's a little bit of a, not, it's not a bait and switch, but it's like, that's not much of a plan.
Well, and I also think what's also, and I, this landed to me in a new way watching the scene in the car where she decides to come back and kind of going through with, well, why did you leave? And then why are you coming back? What's this switch about? She never says to him, there are people trying to kill me.
Right.
She never tells him that in addition to people coming after you, they're coming after me and they're probably the same people. And
probably
so,
same people.
I think it's possible that part of the leaving is, we might be able to survive this individually, together. We draw, like, I put you in more danger by being here because there are people coming after me.
Well, and also, what do you know that, like, you'd also be like, okay, hold on. Bruce, you know, my dad's right-hand guy, he's in on, like, what? I think my father was killed. Like,
right.
what? Who set Lincoln up? Like, you guys are now in that space together.
Right.
And also, you know, those baby blues, man.
Well, yeah. I mean, as ever, I think it's more a scene about what's not said than what's said. And what's not said is so huge. The whole, not the scene, but the whole arc together. And I think in some ways the decision in the car is a decision to go, we should actually talk more of this out. Like,
It's also like, what is her, you know, it's also kind of like, okay, she gets in a car. Where are you going?
Now what?
Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Like, you're kind of out of, in a way, like, you're
out of options.
Yeah. And you're putting your foot down, like, I've made, like you say in the note, right? I'm going to make the right choice this time. But on its face, the right choice. And in reality, mm-hmm. like, the realpolitik of that is not a lot of good options. Kind of got to join forces with this guy.
Well, it's sort of like, what's the next right thing to do, right? Like,
I also love that none of this is, I love you, I need to be with you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, that's, you know, he's not playing that card. You're not playing that card. These people are too, too smart is the right way to put it. But
or too in crisis.
Too in crisis. Well, there's, I think, well, I also think a lot of shows would just lean on that. I have to be with you. Who cares?
Yeah, yeah.
Who cares? We'll figure it out.
Right.
These are these very pragmatic, smart people. And that's almost a secondary concern at this moment. It's just really well done. And the guy, I just forgot how deep it runs. I found it really, really, you know, a show that has, it's, you know, we talked about it a lot in first season, has a kind of, at times, comic book gloss to it, which is great and fun. That like the fact that it can drop into this complexity. It's a lot of it goes to the writing and the setup, and a lot of it goes to you and Wentworth together.
But it was, I mean, the dramaturgy of the episode is a great one because it bounces between your heart in your throat for Sucre and just being so grossed out, and like the whole thing that's going on with Teabag is so blah, that and Lincoln and LJ meeting up with his father, and what does that all mean? And you know, they're going to jail. No, they're being saved. Like, there's so much going on around these scenes that actually I think they're embedded in an episode in a way that buys us a lot of the choices that we made. So I think it was really well constructed.
Yeah, I think that in the way that was it the last episode that so much of it felt about, like, to be about familial bonds, right? About LJ and Lincoln and other things I'm not remembering properly.
Sucre and Maricruz.
Sucre and Maricruz. Oh, C-Note and his wife and daughter, like all
those.
Yeah,
although they weren't
like,
in this episode, which is.
No, I'm saying the last episode. I'm saying the last episode.
Yeah.
Had a thing. This one really feels like all our principles are really in the fucking wind.
Yeah.
Like, everybody feels like they're in, like, lots of space, lots of danger, in a way that, like, all at the same time. I mean, it's...
Okay, and let's...
Like, when you guys are outside, I'm like, Jesus Christ, get inside.
Yeah. Totally. You are so exposed.
Hide.
And, okay, so let's talk a little bit about the why that was in terms of what television was back in 2006. We had something called November Sweeps.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And so sweeps happened usually twice a year in May and November. And they were when the ratings from that were gathered by the Nielsen company would be kind of, it was usually, I think, 2 weeks maybe the sweeps would be. And those ratings numbers would set the advertiser prices for buying ad sales, ad space for the next 6 months. And so it was not uncommon for shows to pull out all the stops to create this sort of must-see TV feeling about an episode around sweeps. And so those couple of weeks would be...
Yeah, even on the comedies, there would be, right, huge, like, oh, Ross and Rachel...
Yes.
We're going to kiss.
Finally get together.
Finally get together. Like, and it was really like, this is what it's all been building for. And Prison Break did a smart thing. A lot of shows ended up doing it. I remember, recall Prison Break being one of the first, where there was kind of a mid-season finale.
Yeah.
And then we would go off the air for a few months.
Yeah.
Or a few weeks at least.
Yep.
And it worked in two ways. One, it certainly gave the writers a
catch up time
and post and production. All of us a way to catch up, but also narratively, there's something satisfying about when you have some huge end of the, it's like take a few weeks to let that be as big as it felt.
Yep. And even to let audiences catch up on their DVR.
Oh, right.
You know,
and I think it was a boon on residuals.
Yeah.
Oh, residuals.
Yeah.
Because they would show all the
remember
old
making a living.
Yes.
Remember when you could make a living on television?
I think I know what the... Oh, no, it can't be. I was going to say, I think I know what the end of Bolshoi Blues is, because I think that's 12. So that's the mid-season finale. Although 13 might be the mid-season finale.
I'll be able to tell you. I can look. I've got a list of when everything aired.
No, don't.
No, I'll tell you later.
Okay. But yeah,
something else, though, that like as they're putting this sweeps episode together, they obviously wanted to move forward the Mary Cruz and Sucre storyline.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about this.
So Camille Guadi had another job.
Can we just go back 1 second?
Yeah.
Somebody played Mary Cruz before Camille Guadi, right?
Yeah, I think we talked about that last season. I remember there being two, but certainly one. They recast the person who played her in the pilot.
But I also think for work reasons, but anyway, I might not know, but okay.
Oh, you know what? I'm not entirely sure.
Let's go with that. It's a cheerier story.
It's fair enough.
Somebody getting replaced is...
Ugh. Yeah, tell me about it.
Hard. So anyway, this goes to that person got a job that they couldn't...
Right, and because she wasn't a series regular,
yeah, they didn't
she
know,
had
they
the
didn't...
opportunity to go take other work.
Yes.
And so she was doing a show. Wait, I think I wrote it down. I think it was called The Nine. So
Camille was.
I think so. Yeah.
I remember The Nine.
And
sure.
So they had to move that storyline ahead using Teresa and using Hector and using all of these other people. And
right. So you notice she wasn't in the she wasn't at the wedding. She just left.
She hadn't they been had in all season.
Yeah.
Not all season.
Although they used a clip of her in this one, meaning she got a little money.
She got a little paid. So she will show up later in the season, and we're going to have her on, and we're going to chat with her. But as I was watching the episode, I remembered, I was like, oh, that's right. There's this super important love story that they had to craft without one of the actors.
But frankly, you know, it works because it is such a negative space.
Yeah.
You know, this guy had this like frustration that he can't get to her.
Yes.
It's like Odysseus.
That we share. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like Odysseus or like After Hours. It's like I can't.
Yeah.
It's like the thing is always a few steps ahead, you know, and it's just great. Like her absence is so brutal.
It's so powerful. And if I remember right too, when she comes back, you're just like, oh, thank God. Like this... It's a little bit of that Michael Cera moment of like,
yeah,
you know, the two high Sarahs, the one from Michael and the one from you. Hang on. You had a you said that you had a story about doing the car crash scene when you were on the phone with Reggie.
I remembered this from last episode. I got married. October of 2006.
Okay, so no, that's around...
October of 2006, yeah. Early October 2006.
Okay.
So the last episode, I remember leaving. I remember shooting a scene and like getting on an airplane to go to meet my friends for a bachelor party. I went back to Dallas to shoot, I think, a couple episodes or maybe one episode. And I specifically remember the scene where the car is in the ditch.
Yeah.
And Dwight is telling me to run down the hill. Right. I run down the hill to see the crash. And then I have the phone call with Kim that they set the car and we're there. And like right before action. And my wedding, I think, is the day like I'm leaving that night or the next morning. And then the wedding is like, you know, 2 days later.
Right. Holy.
Like a day later. It's, you know, I'm flying back to LA and. Everybody's coming in.
Jeez.
And them being like, okay, so here's your path down here. This side and this side is poison ivy and poison oak. And I was just like, if I get fucking poison ivy.
Oh my God, for your wedding.
I'm getting divorced before I get, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, no, it would not that she would be pissed. I'm saying I would be like, miserable.
Also, terrible wedding night. Be like, terrible. Sorry, I itch
also,
everywhere.
All of it. Just like the whole thing, like traveling. And I was just like, oh boy.
Oh my God.
Hey, it was so, and I remember calling my fiance and telling her that we had a good laugh about it.
By the way, I'm glad you didn't take a header into the poison ivy.
Right? And it was kind of one of those things like, I guess I'll know in a day.
One of the things that I was grateful for is that they let me not do hair. A lot of this episode, Sarah's hair is just like...
I love that it's like messy up. Bun or whatever you call that. Yeah.
And I remember asking for it. And it was Carl Bailey was the head of the hair department down there, I believe. No. He didn't come on until... Season 4.
I don't remember Carl.
Carl came on season 4. He's amazing. I loved him so much. I brought him on to Colony.
Oh.
But I remember I was like, hey, can I kind of do like a messy bun? And they're like, sure. And so they did one in the chair. And I was like, it still looks like TV hair.
Uh-huh.
Can I really look like a real? And they were like, do you want to just do it? And I was like, I do.
Yeah.
And I mean, so they just let me like do the thing that you do when you're not you.
It's so effective.
I, at the time, I remember really wanting to push against that. The WB was really big, or the CW was really big at the time. And there was this sort of like, no matter what, you have perfect hair and you have lip gloss and you have, you know, and I was like, can we not? And I was really grateful because there was no pushback from the people upstairs. Do you know what I mean? Like, never got a call from the producers being like, can you look less?
Yeah. Can I to say one of the, I mean, I commented on it when we were doing the rewatch. I said, oh, you look really striking. In one of those mirror shots. And I think part of that was that your hair is up. We don't see that a lot. But also you look
normal.
I think it helps. I think it helps that for the powers that be that you're like, yep, still gorgeous. Look at that face. Like, it doesn't matter that your hair is not perfect, but it really does lend, compared to the a little more polished look that was even at the beginning of the season, the distress and the, you know, the quick movement, like getting out of the shower, your hair being wet, like that there's this constant unsettled feeling. Mm. I think that's great. I think it's a great choice on your part.
I just was grateful that they let me do it. You said something when we were doing the rewatch about a U-turn on camera.
We watched Mahone do it's always cool. A lot of these scenes are a lot on TV. Sometimes we talked about this in one episode where, you know, you're going like this, but somebody, the car is on a trailer.
Yeah.
Sometimes you do what they call a free drive, where you're actually just driving a car.
Yeah.
And the first time I did that a lot was on a show in Chicago called Turks, where I was a
You play a Turk?
Cop. Oh. I played a cop. No, okay. I was a partner of a cop. You know David Cubitt, the
I do not.
Canadian actor? He was
I
the
do not.
I was his partner. Anyway. And I was, you know, right coming out of theater, and I was just raring to go. And there was a scene where like my character jumps in a car, and like it's an Impala, it's an unmarked police car, and he like does a U-turn and like screeches off. And they're like, "We're gonna have the stunt guy do it." And I was like, "What do you mean? I want to do it." And Bob Singer was like, "Yeah, okay, big man, you do it." I was like, "Okay." And this is like blocking off traffic in Chicago on Wabash.
Oh wow.
And like, okay, let's like do it, right? And I did it first time. I jump in and I come around and I go to jam it into, and it just goes into neutral and the car stalls.
And everybody's watching.
Everybody's watching. I will also say, we probably shouldn't admit this, but once you would do a drive. And then the picture car, they'd go cut, and you'd just have to drive all the way around the block back to one, is that we would just flip the lights on.
The police lights?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, guaranteed that's not.
Yeah, I don't think you can do that
anymore.
That's
something you're supposed to do.
No, that's called impersonating a police officer.
It's called impersonating a police officer. A police officer in an emergency, as it turns out.
Not great.
Yeah, the driving stuff is fun. I used to get all sort of like, if you drive forward and then the Teamsters are like, if you get out, I'll back it up and put it back on your mark. And
I know.
For a long time, I'd be like, I can do this. It's fine. And now I'm like, yeah, that'd be great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for your precision and professionalism. We also mentioned Kristen Lehman, who I think is worth mentioning because she's
really great.
I had met her the season before. She was on a show for Fox called Killer Instinct with my buddy Johnny Messner. And I think she was the female lead. She was the second lead of the show. And I remember watching it because of Johnny. And I think Shy McBride was on that too.
Oh.
And she was wonderful.
Love him.
Like, she was just so good.
She's just so solid. Like, as soon as she walks on camera, you're like, solid.
You believe her. And she's somebody who can carry...
Authority.
Authority without having to be like, I'm an authority. You know what I mean? Like, that's a trap that people fall into.
Yep.
And she carries it well. And I think it's important for a lot of these sort of strong female characters on Prison Break that they carry that authority easily and with relaxation. Not with tension. And she did, you mentioned Michelle Forbes too, and like they both just do such beautiful work. And there's something about her and Dominic together that she's got a little bit of a like the whole time that, you know, that it's, I mean, it's scripted, right? It makes sense. The first thing he does is punch her, headbutt her in the face. But it's sort of wonderful. And you get this sense that like, I don't know. I loved her work in it. I thought she was wonderful.
She falls right easily into the thing that Kellerman and Kim both have, which is, I know more than you do, and I'm kind of like, you'll catch up.
Yeah. I'm tolerating you.
I'm tolerating you.
Yeah.
Because I know that you're important to this mission.
Right.
But all your questions are really stupid.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm not going to explain it to you, but just, okay. It's exhausting. And he has the thing, you know, he's like his kind of, you know, link the sink thing, especially coming against, you know, a woman has a kind of like almost built in condescension. Like she calls him, he calls her lady.
Yeah.
Like, why should I trust you, lady?
Right.
And she's just like, she's not trying to convince him of anything.
Yeah.
Right. She's just trying to keep him in a room.
Yeah. I'm going to try and keep you from hurting yourself.
Yeah,
while
not
we
me.
Try and save you.
Not me, you.
That's right.
Right, because you're more of a danger to yourself than anybody else.
Yeah. No, it's a really nice.
It's
a really nice thing. And as you noticed, I think we looked her up. She is in fact Canadian. So.
Yeah, and doing a lot of directing now. Apparently.
Woot woot to more Canadian writers. I feel like.
Well, you're all going to be American soon, aren't you?
Do not. You do not want to see that side of me, and you definitely don't
I
want
saw
to see
a
that
cutout.
Side of Canada. Yeah, have you ever seen a hockey game?
Yep. I saw the cutout the other day. It was like problem solved, and it was Canada, but, you know, and everybody's like, oh, add California. But add California, went above the border, added Minnesota, went over, added the Northeast to down to New York and up. And
added it to Canada?
Uh-huh. I was like, oh, there you go.
Chicago. The entire mayor of Point Roberts, which is U.S. soil, but you can't get to it without passing through Vancouver or passing through B.C. He was like, we'll join you guys. He's like, Oregon, Washington, California. He's like, we'll just join B.C. Let's go. Let's do this.
You mean the fifth largest economy in the world?
Yeah, that one.
California?
Yeah. That one.
I mean, we don't have an army, but okay.
We got brains. You said there was a Dallas Wentworth story, and then we can take a break and do some fan questions.
It just goes to that we were talking about the hats that you wear.
Oh yes, yeah. The nondescript hats that in Prison Break make you invisible to bystanders.
Yeah, Wentworth and I spent a lot of time hanging out in Dallas, and he was, you know.
Famous.
Incredibly famous.
Yeah.
And didn't, you know, it was uncomfortable for him and people were mostly inappropriate. And I remember we went to a movie and I picked him up, and we were on our way, I think, to a, like that mall.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a baseball cap on, and he was like, "You don't have a hat?"
And I was he said that to you?
Uh-huh.
Oh, interesting.
And I was like, no, I mean, I kind of get. And I was like, oh, right, if I get recognized, then.
Yeah. If they're like, you're Kellerman. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So we actually, there was like a Lids, and I went and bought a hat.
Of course there was.
Yeah.
Was it a hat without a logo?
No.
Good, because that's creepy.
Although I can, yeah. Right. No. So, no, I can't remember what it was. It might have been a Rangers hat that was cool. Anyway.
All right, I'm going to tell one quick story that I think we will cut.
Okay.
But it just occurred to me, it did happen while we were filming that scene. So it was hot when
Wait,
we were shooting
the scene. The
Ewan
Wentworth scene outside the car?
The rendezvous, the actual rendezvous.
Uh-huh.
And there were train tracks there, as we noticed in that original shot. Drink, if you're playing the season 2 Prison Break drinking game. And... they're very long, weird series of events. I was currently writing music that I was recording at Goodnight Studios in Dallas for a producer named Gordon Perry, who had been Stevie Nicks's producer back in the day.
I know this story.
And, well, the mirror story is a... I'll tell you the mirror story. Did we talk about this on the show?
I tell this story all the time. I didn't know who I heard from it. I thought maybe it was made up, but I'm so glad that it's real.
No, this is real. We'll start with the Stevie Nicks story. So
Totally interrupting you.
No, it's okay. And none of this is really germane to the show. We'll probably cut it all.
Who
but
cares? It's so good.
So I'd been put in touch with, it's a long story, but there was a New Year's Eve a couple years before where somebody had heard me do some karaoke and had brought me to his friend's house because he was interested in finding some new people to sing. The guy turned out to be Howard Leese. And so one thing led to another, and Howard put me in touch with somebody who put me in touch with Gordon and was like, oh, if you're in Dallas, you should record some music.
Yeah.
So the very first thing he did is he was like, look, there's this Twineman song. Why don't you write some new lyrics to it? We'll record it and see if you know what you're doing. And he had his producer and a bunch of other people come in and play music.
Uh-huh.
I have always wanted to get involved in music, although the music industry has always... struck me as the worst thing imaginable.
Yep.
And I was like, let's go. So I show up.
It makes acting look stable.
Absolutely. It makes it look like the most well-organized, moral, trustworthy place on the face of the earth. So I show up and it's evening because we'd been filming Prison Break all day. And I get in there and I'm a little tired because we've been filming Prison Break all day. And the guy goes, do you want Stevie's mirror? And I was like, what? And he goes, do you want Stevie's mirror? And I was like, do I look okay? Are we videoing this? Like, what's going on? He goes, Stevie's mirror. And what he's talking about is a Coke mirror.
Yep.
That attached to the microphone.
Like a pop screen.
I never saw it. So I, you know, he, for all I know, he's making this up. I don't want to disparage.
No, let's go with the trio. Not disparaging.
But what I did say is if you have that, it belongs in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
100%.
And he was like, yeah, because the way you do it is it's just like the white wind dove.
Right, in between verses.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. And I was like, dude, that's... And I was like, no, I don't. I'm fine. Thank you.
Unbelievable.
I don't... Also... Several weeks after that, I found out I was pregnant. And so, also, thank God.
Good thing you didn't use Stevie's mirror.
Good thing I didn't use
also,
Stevie's mirror.
Also, not good for singing. Not good for your throat.
That's what I hear. So, anyway, we were sitting there, and there was a long setup for the car chase. Because the car chase was a serious stunt. There were a couple, actually, in this episode. This episode had some really big car stunt work. And they did it beautifully. And I had a lot of time, and I was going into the studio later that week, and so I started looking around, and I kind of wrote a song about super toxic relationship, and the first lines were mistakes like train tracks following neatly. And it was a
good
sort
line.
Of like weird... It's not good. Song's not good. But I remember sitting there, and if I ever find my season two scripts, on the back of my script, I just sort of started like, and it's a very, very, it's a song about a very toxic.
I love it.
Toxic thing. The hook is really fucked up. But I actually think in some ways that song was sort of running through my head.
Amazing.
As it was almost like, this is Sarah's inner monologue. Anyway, so that was part of what I was doing with the heat cooking my head in Dallas while we were there.
That is great. I want to hear the song, please.
No, I'm gonna, no, I'll send you the Twineman cover because that's a genuinely good song.
I want to hear that too.
Just because they wrote the song and I didn't. That's what I'm saying. Like they actually were people who
I don't think I've heard you sing much, so I would really like that.
You actually may not. There might be a reason that you haven't. I like listening to you sing more than I like listening to me sing. Anyway,
so,
let's take a break.
I hate listening to me sing.
do you know those plug in? Oddly.
What do you mean?
Should
we take a break and do some fan questions?
We should, although right now I'm annoyed with myself for not dragging you into that studio and doing something together. Anyway, yes, let's take a break and let's do some questions.
We'll be right back.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
We're back. We're back with fan questions. Okay. I want to start with this one because I think it's fun.
I'm going to say to fans, please bombard us with requests to hear Sarah's Prison Break song. Sorry.
Nah.
Sorry, Sarah.
Yeah.
We're never going to get it. I know.
Yeah. You're never going to get it because it's not good. Like you'd listen to it and be like, oh, that's embarrassing.
You don't get to decide that.
I do. It's my song.
I have stacks and stacks of hard drives that would tell you all my bad songs that no one will ever hear.
I know.
Okay.
So, by the way, thank you for sending in your questions.
Yes.
We do really appreciate it. And there were a lot on this. I sort of whittled it down to a handful. So, Sarah and Paul, this is from at Alicia, LISNYJ.
Yeah.
Using your writer brains, give us an alternative ending. Sarah stays in Gila, never runs into Kellerman in the parking lot. What happens next?
Kellerman gets there looking for Sarah. Can't find her. But using his brilliant Special Forces Secret Service brain, does some tracking down and finds Mahone.
Ooh. And do we have an Owen Krevecki? Not Owen Krevecki. Who's the guy you left in the well?
Yeah, I can't remember what his name, his character's name was.
Okay.
Who I left in a hole. But he busts him out. And then they're on, then they're partners and they're on the, they're chasing them both together. And Sarah and Michael bail out of Gila and rendezvous with Lincoln and LJ. And I don't know if Aldo's in on that or not. And then it becomes a race to the border.
I like the idea where Mahone and Kellerman team up and they're like, do you hate this Kim guy? I hate this Kim guy. and they pretend that they've got Michael in custody to lure him. Mm. I love the teaming up of the two of them. Mm-hmm. And they kill Kim to get him off of their backs.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what happens next.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a great question, though.
It's fun, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of awesome.
I like this question, too. I think it's also from Alicia, L-I-S-N-Y-J. And if the show was written in 2025 instead of 2005, how would Michael have sent Sarah secret messages?
I think we
have advanced beyond origami. There would have been an origami app. just an origami emoji that would just come up on her phone. Like a paperless post.
A paperless post. You know, I actually like the idea. Somebody told me, and I'm sure this is nonsense, but I liked it so much, I'm just going to play like it's true.
Yeah.
That the espionage community is returning to, like,
oh, I would imagine.
Ditto copies, carbon copies, and typewriters and stuff, because getting off of the sort of digital fingerprint of things is important.
Oh, yeah.
I almost like the idea that...
That's really interesting.
That it would be super analog. I have no idea why this just came into my mind, and I don't even know if it's possible. I like the idea of Sarah cracking an egg one day while she's cooking, and out comes a little note.
That's amazing.
It's not like possible.
Like a David Blaine. Well, David Blaine could probably do it.
That's right.
I like that. Speaking of analog and digital, we talked about this during the rewatch a little bit. How did Sarah know how to hotwire a car? And it's got to be different now. Cars are basically computers. So,
yeah, I think so. When I read this question, when I was typing these up yesterday, I was like, how did she? I'm going to go with Joe. And I think his name is Joe. It might have been the actor's name was Joe.
It was. The actor's name was Joe. He's in everything now. He's great.
Is he? From the flashback episode, from Brother's Keeper?
Your drug boyfriend.
I'm thinking
Joe Sikora.
There you go. Yes. I'm thinking he's the one who taught her how to hotwire a car.
Yeah.
I think it's connected. And this is, I don't think that's too prejudicial. I think it's connected to her drug use. And
I think you spend more time with a certain element, as they say.
Mm-hmm. A certain subset.
Yeah.
Of the world.
Yeah.
This I thought was interesting because it sort of speaks to the cadence again of the show. At In a Little While said fans decoded the rendezvous location as early as September.
What?
For the episode that aired in November. Remember, show started airing in August, so that's weeks. How surprising is this level of fan dedication? Were the writers aware of how every little detail was being dissected week after week, even without the power of streaming?
That's super impressive.
It's super impressive. I didn't know that until that question.
I didn't either. From the cipher or whatever it's called?
Yeah, I think from the...
Wow.
I think when they zoomed in on the cranes.
Yeah. The dot, dot, dash, dash and all that stuff? Or is it from what Mahone is... circling and figuring out. I can't remember.
Because that was last week, so that would have been October. So if fans figured it out in September, they're ahead of Mahone, they're ahead of Kellerman, they're ahead of Sarah. I mean, they're ahead of everyone except Michael.
Right.
And I cannot imagine that the writers would have anticipated that, or I think they would have made it harder.
And also, this is at the beginning of the overlap of the internet and...
Yeah.
And television. So these communities were popping up to kind of do that, share information, and
it's the television without pity community.
It's the television without pity community.
Yeah,
that is so cool.
By the way, it cracks me up when you do that. You push the microphone forward.
I'm just that lazy.
I don't know why I do. Every time I'm like, is he okay? Oh yeah, he's doing that.
I'm like,
thing.
What's wrong? Why is my windscreen starting to fall apart? I can't believe it.
But at that in is... a little while, no, I don't think the writers were aware of it. But I would be willing to bet that in September, when someone would have called the writers' room and been like, "Yo, they figured it out," that they would start writing differently from that point forward.
I don't think it hurts. I mean, I think it's probably that level of fan involvement and interest is what you dream of as a writer, especially when you're writing something so intricate as something like Prison Break. You want those details to count. And sometimes I think you're like, does anybody really care if this really matches up? And the answer is yes.
Absolutely, yes.
And it totally... it totally has meaning, you know, it ends up having meaning.
And I'm actually really grateful that it did have meaning, because at the same time, Lost was a year ahead of us. So we're in season two, Lost would have been season three. And they had a super devoted fandom that was looking into all these Easter eggs and all these things. And I never followed Lost really closely, but I worked with Josh Holloway for years. And he was like, that was a tough one for us because fans would do all this work. And then it wouldn't always go anywhere. And they would feel betrayed or like they'd wasted their time. And so I'm really glad that whoever it was in the Prison Break writers' room was like, let's make sure that the prop on the day actually is tied into something and that we're not sort of punting, kicking the can down the...
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Couple more.
Here at Michael Schofield Turk, I reworded this a little bit because I think there was a bit of an ESL situation, but I believe the question is, if Paul really learned what Sarah's father had said, would he set her free or was he always going to kill her? Maybe that's better for next week because that's a little bit ahead.
I think that's better for next week.
Sorry, it came in. Okay, we'll hang on to it. Sorry, at Michael Schofield Turk. We'll get back to you on this one.
Sarah and Planet Sarah 2024. Sarah and Michael had a passionate and beloved romance on screen. How did you navigate that experience of fans shipping you together in real life? Did it ever feel intrusive? Did you guys find it amusing? Did it ever create any awkwardness between the two of you?
It never created awkwardness between the two of us. I mean, it was simplified by the fact that Wentworth was gay. Do you know what I mean? Like that, the whole thing right there just felt very straightforward. I think we were both aware of the distance between what the fans said they wanted and what would actually be more satisfying in the long term.
I feel like the, sorry, finish your thought.
No, go ahead. What's that?
I feel like the audience, the questioner is also saying people wanted you two together in real life. That there's that thing of like, oh my God, I want David Schwimmer and Jennifer Aniston to actually fall in love.
Do you know, honestly, where I think that was helpful was that it meant that I could go to events with Wentworth and be his buddy and leading lady.
Yep.
And it obviated a lot of questions about like, who's he dating? Mm-hmm. What's their gender? Like, it wasn't...
And kept your... husband who's probably not interested in going to those things.
Oh my God. Yeah.
right.
No. Like, my husband had no. No.
Nope.
He's allergic to attention.
Yep.
Thinks Hollywood is a waste of time. And so it solved a problem for both of us.
Sure.
I think we both were aware of it and kind of played with it a little bit.
Sure.
But it was also a way of keeping the media out of Wentworth's beeswax at a time when, you know, he didn't want certain parts of his life to be anything but private. And it is odd to me sometimes still on Instagram, I'll get people being like, would you marry Wentworth? And I'm like, there are so many things that you need to know before you ask that question. Like, I mean,
I'm married.
Yeah. Like I'm not even going to bother. Like, if sure.
Right. So interesting.
So interesting. All right. I think maybe let's do one more of these. We may cut it, but because this one made me think about it in a different way. It's K.A. dot Tharina, Katharina, 1926. If Sarah hadn't been in danger, would she have met Michael in Gila?
It's a good question.
And did Michael think she would run away with him, even if she didn't need to?
Question.
It gave me a different perspective because, of course, when he sends her those notes, he doesn't necessarily think that her life is going to be a catastrophic shit show.
I mean, he probably knows. Did he see something about her on the news? Or am I making that up?
He did, but I think that's when he calls her. Okay. I think at least one, if not two of the cranes, he mailed, you know, like.
Right.
They were kind of already out there in the postal system.
Right.
And how on earth he got them to her is a question the show never answers. You know, maybe there's somebody that he paid in Chicago to drop them in the mail. I don't know. But
fascinating. Do you?
Oh, but he wouldn't have known.
Like, it's interesting. Like, it was never part of his plan to make this all up to Sarah.
No,
this is because they had vibes.
This is because they had vibes.
And he also, you know, like he did with Pope, there are people that he kind of rolled over interpersonally,
right,
to get to his goal,
and then felt bad about,
and felt bad about. And so, yeah. Like, but again, it's like, how are you making this right by taking me to Panama? but it also does, it does answer a lot of problems for her. More than he knows, I guess.
I mean, I think, to answer part one of that, no, I don't think Sarah would have gone.
Yeah, I don't either.
She didn't need to. I think if her father had lived and been like, Sarah, you're right. Lincoln is innocent. We're going to pursue this. And the
justice.
And
also, like, you're not going to be in legal trouble. You can go back to your life. You can practice medicine. Like, whatever that would have looked like. You're not going to be like,
he'll be exonerated. You'll be exonerated. I mean, I think part of what drives her to him, and I appreciate this from the writers because it makes her look not dumb,
right,
is there really isn't another person that she can trust.
That's right. She's out of options.
And I think it's an interesting question. Did Michael think that she would come with him if she had another option? I kind of wonder if the Michael Scofield brain says she won't come unless she's desperate. But if she's desperate, then I can help her.
Then I'm here.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
kind of like she says to Sucre. It's like, if you need this down the road.
Yeah, it's a failsafe.
I mean, I also think he's in love with her.
100%, but I don't think he's, as you pointed out earlier, I don't think he's going to play the card of, I love you, please come with me. I think it's, his love language is, let me try and get you out of
his
lethal danger.
His love language is dot, dot, dash, dash, dot, 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 paper crane.
Sunglasses, Gila.
I can offer you a lifetime of adventure.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's really funny. I can offer you a lifetime of adventure. Word to the wise, friends. If somebody offers you a lifetime of adventure,
just do a little research.
Make sure that they can offer you also a lifetime safety. Of periodic rest.
Safety, yeah.
And
yeah.
Safety and kindness. Wow. Because a lifetime of adventure sounds both beautiful and a little bit like a curse.
Correct.
Okay, thank you for being with us.
Oh, this is a great one. This is really
today.
Might be my favorite episode yet.
This has been fun, and I'm really excited about
the
next episode because it sizzles.
Yeah.
Also, RIP the forthcoming sadness of Teabag's hand.
Oh, golly.
Okay, so thank you for listening. Feel free. We are inviting you to subscribe to our watch parties on Patreon, wherever you're listening
right
now.
Please do. That community's hopping.
It's super fun. And actually, I got to say, like, the Discord moderators have cultivated this really extraordinary, wonderful community that we adore. So feel free to join them. You can watch us on YouTube. Maybe you already are. If you are, hello. And that's all I have to say.
How do you join the Patreon community? Oh, it's in the show link. on whatever page you're watching.
We're really
And also, you can go back and listen to season one because all the translations of all the languages are there.
That's right. As well as our fan fiction.
Yes. And all the fan fiction we did. So good. You know what else I wanted to tell you?
What's that?
Is it Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul is a Caliber Studios production.
Is it? You know, and it's funny because I think your hosts have been inmates, Sarah Wayne Callies and Paul Edelstein.
Yeah, but our prison warden is producer Ben Haber. So.
And also the front man of our Jailhouse Rock band, who does not need a mirror to get through his sessions, is Paul Edelstein, who made all our music.
And our Prison Yard tattoo artist, logo and brand designers, John Nunziato at Little Big Brands. Check them out at www.littlebigbrands.com.
You can follow us on Instagram and YouTube at Prison Break Podcast. Email us at pbpodcast@caliber-studio.com. Or you can call us at 401-3-P-BREAK.
Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul has been a Caliber Studio production. Thank you for listening.
Call me. Thank you for listening. Got a little punchy there towards the end.
We'll see you next time.
Woo!
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.